From Homestand Sports, this is Day Games. Day Games wants to thank our sponsor, HelloFresh. Forget takeout, HelloFresh delivers all the ingredients for delicious, healthy meals anyone can prepare at home in less than 30 minutes. Go to HelloFresh.ca and use promo code ANTIKA50 to get 50% off your first order. HelloFresh is on a mission to bring cooking back into our lives, with real, whole ingredients that are healthier and we can feel good about. They do all the shopping, planning, and deliver step-by-step recipes and their ingredients so we can relax and enjoy all there is to love about cooking. They plan, they shop, you cook. Go to HelloFresh.ca and use ANTIKA50 to get 50% off your first box. Hello and welcome to Day Games. Day Games is a podcast where we speak to people that work in and around professional baseball in an effort to better understand the daily lives of those working in the game that we all love. We'll be asking them what it takes to do their jobs day in and day out, and the different challenges that exist in working in different parts of the baseball world. My name is Mike Son, and I'll be your host. During my day job, I work as an ergonomist, a scientist who studies how people work. In my spare time, I write about how muscle fatigue influences baseball pitchers. My goal is to talk to those who work in baseball, find out how they got into their jobs, and how they solve their everyday problems and excel in their roles. If you've played fantasy baseball in the past 5 years, I'd be willing to bet that you've read something Eno has written. Eno currently works for FanGraphs, but you can find his articles all over the web, including on ESPN.com. Eno also appears on the Sleeper in the Bus podcast, where he discusses the next up-and-coming stars of fantasy baseball. Unlike most of us who write for baseball blogs, Eno has a lot of contact with the players in Major League Baseball. This gives him a really unique insight into how players use analytics to scout other teams and themselves. Eno and I met up before a Pitch Talks event this summer and had a chance to talk about his unique career path and his success as one of the foremost analysts in pitching who's not currently employed by a professional team. Kind of just to put it out there, what's a day in the life when you are writing all these articles, you're coming up with all this content for FanGraphs, for ESPN, all the different media sources you work with? Like, what does a day in the life kind of look like?
Yeah, I mean, the most difficult thing, it's not actually that difficult. I find it fascinating and fun, but the most difficult thing, of course, is coming up with the idea. And so, you know, the first thing I have to do is turn on, and I'm on the West Coast, so it's actually sort of interesting. I wake up and start working around the time that people are heading off to lunch on the East Coast, and that's the bulk of the media market. So I have to pretty much have my stuff done the day before. So I'm always, the first thing I'm doing is really promoting. So it is sort of wake up, turn on, you know, the MLB Network to find out what everyone's talking about. You know, I'm not like a hot taker, so I'm not like formulate hot take, but you know, maybe I have to say something about it if it's, you know, Tim Tebow, and you know, even if I just roll my eyes, I have to probably say something about it. And then start promoting my pieces in a sort of somewhat orderly fashion. You know, have to think about what's the best time to do it on Twitter, not do it too often on Twitter. You know, how do I increase engagement on Facebook? How can I get a video attached to it? And then, you know, is there a picture that I can use to do it on Instagram? I mean, it's sort of, that part is actually not my favorite. I love being on Twitter and I love the interaction that I can get from that, but it's not my favorite to think about promotion in that way. I'd rather, you know, I just put it out there and everyone loves it and everyone retweets it and I don't have to, you know, kind of think about these sort of things. But to some extent you have to.
Oh, of course. And I think that's the one thing that's the hardest with any job is that, you know, you get hired for a reason. You get hired to do the main content of your work, which is, you know, coming up with these great ideas and writing the articles. But it's the other stuff that kind of like aggravates you, you know, having to be your own hype man, the towel in the air.
And I never wanted to be in sales. So, you know, it's self-sales in a way. But it's okay when it's going on a radio show or doing a podcast like this. I love that. You know, all it is we're talking, you know, and people get exposed to, you know, my ideas or, you know, my work. That's easy. It's more, you know, trying to plan out things that I don't like so much.
I can imagine. Now, you mentioned being on the West Coast and in the way that that can kind of, you know, you have to do things the day before, but at the same time, it's it must be kind of nice, because if you have an East Coast day game starting, you know, you have live baseball on the entire day.
Yeah, and that's what I'm hoping for every day is baseball at 10 o'clock, you know?
Yeah.
And you know, I get that baseball going, and then either the baseball game itself creates an idea for me. And then, you know, I have what some people might consider a crutch. I have things that I can query and look for that create ideas for me. So I can look at whose changeup has changed the most in terms of drop. You know, I can look at who's added velocity on their fastball. I can look at certain things to find, you know, the headline, who's, you know, the fastball that has improved the most, or, you know, that sort of stuff. And those always do well because there's a most in there.
Yeah, you know, of course.
I think I have one title. It might have been for Not Graphs. That was something like the most mostest of most all time mostest.
And that was probably your mostest retweeted
mostest
article.
Shared.
Most mostest.
But,
yeah.
You know, those are my crutches. But the wonderful thing about Twitter, actually, is that so many people ask me questions. And all those questions, there are so many. I would say a large percentage of my pieces are responses. Let me look, especially my chats. I have chats on Thursdays.
Yeah.
A lot of times people ask me a question in there. Like someone said, how would we define, is this one of the best seasons of all time, and how would we know it? And so I laid out the groundwork for a piece in the chat right there. I said, well, we could define it on what percentage of games played that season were meaningful games, you know, so how tight was it down the road, you know, to the end of the season. You could look at, how close were the games, what percentage of actual postseason games were played, you know, so how often did they go to 7-5?
Mm-hmm.
And then maybe look at win percentage swings within those games in the postseason. So you're talking about, because like the perfect season for me might be, and then maybe an underdog quotient for the final champion.
Mm-hmm.
The most perfect season for me would be almost like not a number one contender, you know, making its way through a wild postseason, you know, maybe making the postseason on the last day, and then making its way through a wild postseason with big swings and seven game series, and then eventually coming out on top. That might be a season that everyone remembers, you know, kind of in the way they would probably define it by the champion. They'd be like, oh, the year, you know, the Royals won it all, you know,
yeah,
despite being a mediocre team or something, you know. But so that's a piece I can write pretty easily if I do the queries for that and do the math for that. So
yeah, it's kind of like it's almost a circle of it kind of sustains itself. You know, you come up with really good ideas, but then when you have those really good ideas, people ask you more questions about it. So it had to start with you at some point in time,
and
too.
It's
yeah,
so internet.
Yeah,
I mean, it's so internet. I couldn't do my. Somebody asked me if I wrote for print publications and how different it would be, and I almost couldn't do it, because not only do people catch things that are wrong in my piece, I read the comments. There are people who don't. I read the comments because they catch things that are legitimately wrong in my piece.
That is like internet 101, though. Don't read the comments.
I know.
Yeah. But I guess you're not really getting the trolls. You're not getting the posted 9/11 stuff on there.
But
yeah.
Even on places where there are more trolls, I look for the kernel of truth in everybody, what they say.
Mm-hmm.
It's something that I've always done, is that I've never really gotten into fights. And when people confront me like that, I usually find a way for us to find a common ground and to talk about it.
Yeah.
So, you know, a lot of times I've even talked trolls down, you know, that were telling me to jump off a cliff, and we got to the kernel of their question, and I said, well, that's a legitimate question, we can talk about that. So
I think that's a really that's a gift if you can do that.
Well,
sure.
It does create a little bit of acid reflux sometimes. I mean, there's some people are very strident and sure that you're an idiot, but that's fine. I have to be sure of myself and be calm and talk to them. And then a lot of times they create ideas. And I think on Twitter, somebody was joking about, you know, a righty they thought was a lefty. Like, I always thought, no, what it was somebody was asking me, oh, should I start A.J. Griffin against the Houston Astros? Because the Astros have trouble against lefties. And I said, yeah, but the Astros are a good lineup, and they're playing in Houston. It's a home run park. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't think I'd like A.J. Griffin there. And then I go, oh, and A.J. Griffin is a righty. And then we were both like, oh, duh. And we both realized that we thought AJ Griffin was a lefty for a long time. So I did a piece the next day that was like, you know, who are the pitchers you thought were lefties that are actually righties? And then I defined the difference between righties and lefties in terms of movement and velocity and pitch mix. Mm-hmm. And then I found by the numbers who are the righties that are most like lefties. And they actually lined up a lot.
Really?
Yeah, Chase Anderson was my number one. He's a changeup throwing guy from the Milwaukee Brewers.
Yep.
And he was like my number one guy. And when I asked Twitter, he was like number two on the list. So they actually nailed it. And there were so many names. Mike Fiers was a name. He was high up there. There were so many names of guys. And they're not usually stars because even though Zach Greinke got two votes, once you've seen Zach Greinke a couple times, you're like, okay, he's a righty.
Yeah. And he leans with his right shoulder when he's headbutting somebody when they're coming, I think, too.
Clavicle joke.
Yeah. So you talk a lot about the work you've done with related to fantasy baseball, but at the same time, you spend a good amount of time in the park talking to hitters and that. A lot of your work and a lot of your advanced statistics and your advanced metrics you create, like the Arsenal scores, things like that, those can actually be used by real teams, real coaches to make decisions. Have you noticed, like, as you've become more prominent in the community and had more access to players, that you've kind of blurred those lines and the fantasy baseball stuff is real baseball stuff at the same time?
Oh, for sure. It colors my day. I mean, you know, the day where I'm at home, you know, in the, going back to the day in the life of the day that I'm home, it's more numbers and spreadsheets because I don't have the players at my disposal.
Yeah.
And the day is, you know, content creation until, you know, 3 or 4, and then, you know, the East Coast night games come on, and then I might kick back and watch some baseball to come up with ideas that way. But and actually by 4 o'clock there's no more today work. You know, it's too late on the West Coast even. Mm-hmm. So, but on the days that I go into the clubhouse, I have to, you know, prepare for each of these players, and a lot of times it's almost the exact same thing I would do if I was considering picking up that player in fantasy. Mm-hmm. Or if I was going to go into a chat, or if I was going to do a trade offer or something. And I'm looking at all the same stuff, looking at their pitch mix, if it's changed, if one pitch has gotten more effective or faster or changed movement, if their release points have changed. And basically what I'm the basic question that I'm asking them, which I hope no players are listening, because the basic question I'm asking them is, this change that you've made that's affected your performance, is it sustainable?
Mm-hmm.
And that's a fantasy baseball question.
Yeah.
And I think they appreciate it. I think some of them appreciate it for understand that that's the basic question, because some of them are asking themselves the same question. The smarter, more engaged, you know, forward-thinking players are like, they're basically saying, well, did this happen because of this change, or was it another change? You know, Trevor Bauer in particular is always thinking about things that way. And he said,
yeah,
you know, there's so many things changing during the season. You don't know if it was that grip that you just did, or if it was the workout that you did, or the change, because there's natural change in stuff over the course of the season.
Mm-hmm.
Where you get more velocity as the season goes on, the weather affects your pitches. So, that's my easy, you know, preparation work. And then, you know, I have bigger ideas that take longer. So those I don't prepare for. I just have a question that I sneak into all my interviews. So, you know, at the end of my interview with Joey Votto, I'll say, you know, I'm also asking everybody about picking up the baseball, what they can see out of the pitcher's hand. That's what I'm working on right now.
Mm-hmm.
And so that one will be one that I have to ask hitting coaches about, pitchers, hitters, and it'll take, you know, a month to put together. Mm-hmm. And now those are actually kind of frustrating, because it's like, when do I go with it? When do I have enough? When do I put it all together? And it's a lot of work, because it's a lot of transcribing and a lot of, you know, pulling together stuff from, you know, different, you know, like I go into journals, you know, scientific research journals, you know, and add stuff from the players, and have to always have visuals and then, you know, transcribe the stuff. So some of those pieces have taken a month and maybe, you know, 30 hours of work, you know, to really put together.
Yeah, some of those more advanced statistical pieces with the interviews integrated into them. That's, you know, that's people think, oh, it's a blog post, whatever. That's, you know, really, really good work that's going
on
there.
And I really enjoy the internet for not only the content creation that we've been talking about, but for what it allows me to do in a post. Like, you know, in my, even in ESPN, the magazine, they could maybe put a picture in, but would they want to put tables in, and would they want like a tableau that moves?
Tableau stuff is so cool. How you can do the interactive graphs
click
and that.
Things, and it'll change for you. And then, you know, GIFs where it's like the actual, like almost like a little video clip and stuff. I mean, That, I think, can really make writing more compelling. And that's those are my favorite pieces where I've, you know, I wrote this piece earlier this year about older players actually getting better at modulating their performance and and being more less volatile and being less streaky.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had a friend who had a volatility stat, and I had him age it. So he gave me an aging curve for volatility, and basically players just become less volatile as they get older. So, you know, some of it is they lose that peak performance because they're getting worse.
Mm-hmm.
So the range is flatter, and it's it's not necessarily a good thing all the way through, but it is part of what veterans do is figure out how to be more steady Eddie. And I link that back to research that I did at Stanford that I worked on that was about we did a happiness project where we beeped people 5 times a day and asked them for their state of happiness at the moment and what they were doing later. And what we found was older people got happier because they had better coping mechanisms. If they were sad, they were going to go eat a tub of ice cream because that's what they do. If they were sad, they were going to go take a jog because that's what they do.
Yeah.
They were going to walk their dog. They were going to hang out with their daughter, you know. And so these things, are we call them coping mechanisms, but they are sort of what we do to modulate our own emotions.
Yeah, for sure. It's almost kind of like you almost have a survivor bias in there too, to some extent. You know,
yeah, crazy volatile, you wouldn't. Almost every aging curve has some survivor bias. But.
Yeah, definitely. So going back to something you mentioned, you said kick back, watch the baseball games at 4 o'clock when that comes around.
Oh, wait.
Yeah.
Kick back.
That's a Collective Arts a beer there from Hamilton, Ontario.
This is a gift here. I should label it here. Rhyme or Reason, Extra Pale Ale. It looks a beautiful can.
It's one of my favorites. And it's one of my favorites. But like I said,
nice floral.
You know, I've given a lot of conference talks to some real big wigs out there, and never been as nervous as to give you a beer with the over 2,000 beers on the untapped there.
Well, you know, the overall key to my life, as I see it in terms of work, is that I found something that was play for me and made it work. And I made it work in that it pays me. And there's enough different stuff in there that I don't get burned out.
Definitely.
You know, if there's too much baseball on, you know, I can go make a sandwich, you know, try to think of an interesting sandwich, and there's that. Then there's beer graphs at the end of the day where I have to think about beer, and it stretches my mind to think about things in different ways and learn about the science of making beer. And,
of course.
You know, learn about the science of a correct pitch. And, you know, so, and I believe in art enough that, you know, it's not just numbers all the time. I mean, people might put me in that box, but, you know, there's enough art in baseball and in beer that I'm not convinced it's always like, you know, come down to 1 plus 1.
Yeah. And, you know, tying that back in there, do you find that you can ever just turn it off completely when you're enjoying a beer or you're enjoying a baseball game? Like, or is there always an element of, you know, I'm thinking about how I could apply this to the next day's work?
It is the reason I don't write about music.
Okay.
And the reason I don't write about music or haven't so far, I did it in college some, but music and film and arts, that was my beat in college.
Mm-hmm.
I had the Stanford Daily's intermission, their arts section. And I didn't like it. I didn't like it because it took me out of the moment.
Mm-hmm.
And I know, I realize what that says about baseball, but in the most compelling moments, especially live, it is funny, you're not supposed to root in the press box. I'll find myself a little clenched fist or you know, like sort of having to kind of not say something, you know, and like looking around at the crowd and being like, you know, I'm feeling this. And, you know, this might be a little bit different because my job doesn't require me. I'm not a beat reporter, so I don't have to be in the press box for the whole game. I'm not covering the game as a game.
Yeah.
I'm not like waiting to talk to players after the game about what happened in the game.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even do a lot of post game. So there, in order to keep my fandom alive, I actually sometimes leave the press box and sit with friends at the games, through the game. Like, so for example, tomorrow, Blue Jays Red Sox, that might date us, who knows when this comes out, but
yeah,
there's a Blue Jays Red Sox game on while I'm here, and I'm hoping to both work it as media and, you know, ask some players some questions about picking the ball up. That's the one I'm working on now. And then leave the press box, leave the stadium, you know, pre-party at a local bar re-enter the stadium as with a ticket. So I think that that's a good way to sort of keep the art alive too, and to keep the passion alive and not get too burnt out on it. I don't know. I really respect the beat writers. I'm so glad I only go into the stadium twice a week. Mm-hmm. It's the perfect amount for me. Get to see new players every week, get to talk to them, and not, you know, I see a lot of burnout with people that have to travel 120 days a year and, you know, cover bad teams in September, and just, I see some dead eyes sometimes.
I can imagine.
And how do they have families, you know?
yeah, definitely.
They're gone. Even when they're home, they're gone. Mm-hmm. Even when they're home, they're gone at 7 o'clock, you know? So
as much as people think, you know, it must be a lot of fun to, you know, go watch baseball every day, you know, that's, they don't work a normal work shift, so they're missing a lot of, you know, their kids coming home from school or their kids going off to school and that type of thing. So
the ones I talked to have done this successfully make a big deal out of the mornings, which is difficult too, because you're up until, you know, one at the ballpark, mm-hmm. but maybe you can take naps or whatever. But, you know, if you can make a big deal about the times that you can be there when other people can't, like all winter, you know, you can be there all the time. So
yeah, make the most out of the time you do have at home, right?
But still, for me, I think it seems like a young man's game. And what's weird is that because the jobs are so sought after, it's not necessarily filled with young men. So and it is like 95% men. So it's an interesting industry. I'm very happy with the way it's worked out for me. I can't imagine. This is the perfect job for me right now.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's just, you know, it's so various. It's like I do the stats days, and then I do the days where I'm talking to the players, and then days that are more about beer, and I go interview a brewer, and then, you know, then I'm on a radio show, I have my podcast, you know. Like, these are all very different skills. They're verbal, and then I even help Fangraphs sort of with business stuff and thinking and strategy and stuff. So, you know, it's something that I've bought into. I love my coworkers, and it feels good. And
is there a Fangraphs office?
No,
you guys are all just remote.
The cloud.
The cloud.
we manage to at least once or twice a year all be in the same place.
Okay.
It used to be Arizona, but we're getting tired of Arizona.
Too dry.
Well, the spring training. Yeah. Phoenix. I don't know. I don't need to talk crap on Phoenix, but
okay. We'll keep Phoenix out of our mouth. So with all your access to the players and that, do you find that you ever run into a time where you're picking somebody up on a fantasy team just because, like, you really like that guy, like, as a person?
Yeah, I try to. That's a very difficult one. Also, because, you know, when I'm in there, they're trying to convince me they're good, right?
That's
when the light goes on and they're talking about, I did this. This is why I'm good.
There's no way that a professional athlete, though, they may have some self-doubt at times. Like, they all believe they're good, and they are good, right?
They're one of 300 or whatever.
Exactly. Like, the numbers game to get to that point. Like, that guy was the best, probably, shortstop on his team growing up.
Everywhere along the line, yeah.
Exactly. And then we were talking about Trevor Bauer earlier, and you had you'd met with him last off season.
He said he was terrible.
and somebody like that, you know, he's really trying to make himself better. So when you see him have a performance like he struck out 13 Blue Jays pretty recently, that's right, you must kind of think, like, man, I'm happy for this guy because he's made an adjustment and it looks like it's working out for
Trevor
him.
For maybe three straight years, or at least two straight years, in my one of my deepest leagues, American AL Labor, I was telling you about.
Yeah.
And I've believed in him. I believe in his stuff. You know, when he tells me what he's working on, I always think that you know, he's just right around the corner from a breakout. And those type of games prove that it's in there. But at the same time, should I remove myself from my subjects a little bit more? It's worth thinking about. You know, I've had a lot of good interviews with Andrew Cashner. And I think I've probably owned Andrew Cashner too often because of it.
Yeah.
Because I'm always like, he's always telling me, oh, you know, I just altered my grip on the slider and I'm doing this and I can see it in the numbers. I'm like, yeah, this guy's thinking, you know, he looks like Country Bumpkin, got the crazy mullet, you know.
Good beard.
You know.
Well, not anymore. Beard's gone.
Yeah,
right?
The beard's gone because he's in Miami. But, you know, 95 mile an hour fastball, he's got to be able to figure this stuff out. And, you know, finally this year I was like, you know what, I just think the secondary stuff is not as good as I thought it was, you know?
Yeah.
And his command's not that great, and the fastball's a little straight, and it's just, He's one of those lesser than the sum of its parts guys, and it took me a while to get here.
Yeah. At the same time, like, you probably still do find yourself kind of just hoping he turns it around just as a person,
struck
really.
Struck out 9 and 5 innings the other day.
Yeah.
You know? He's still got some stuff in there. I wonder if, like, a new pitching coach wouldn't do it for him, but, yeah. That's another thing, too, is that I'm an optimistic person, and so I'm much more, like, if someone gives me a narrative to hold on to that I can believe in and then is somewhat supported by the numbers, then I'm into it. You know, I'm like, yeah.
Have you ever run across any of these players or anybody else that's followed your beer stuff as well and then tried to bring it all together as like a beer and baseball type of chat with anybody? Or are these guys, their body's too much of a temple to get into that type of stuff?
The closest I've gotten is Sean Doolittle, I think maybe his favorite brewery is one of my favorite breweries. This guy, Alex Tweet, left Modern Times in San Diego and came up to the Bay Area and started a place called Fieldwork. And they brew every year a beer called, it's a ginger IPA. And I forget what it's called, but all the proceeds go to a local charity that helps young gay homeless people. Sean Doolittle's girlfriend was raised by two lesbian women, and they're very active in the community. And so it's a ginger IPA for Doolittle, who's a red, you know, ginger.
Yeah.
And Doolittle actually likes beer. His girlfriend doesn't drink it, but he's actually been in there. So I'm trying to put together a charity event where the field work opens a sour that they haven't opened before, and the proceeds from that go to a charity, and maybe we can get Doolittle to come and might be able to talk to him there, maybe do a sort of live podcast from there that's about beer and baseball. And you know, the timing has to be perfect, you know. It has to be one of those
things.
It has to be like October before he's gone somewhere, and you know, while there's still people around that care. And
of course.
Yeah.
so to finish this all off, and this is kind of an open-ended question that might go long, but 10 years from now, how do you see your career shaping up? You know, you're talking about maybe getting into some philanthropic activities there and charity work and that. And as your profile increases and your access to the players increases, that might be a really exciting venue for you. So how do you see your role, you know, not only with Fangraphs and ESPN, but Enoceris Incorporated, how do you see that shaping up over the next 10
years?
Well,
I'd love to get a backer for a beer. And so one of the most effective models for beer stores right now in the States is, I don't even know if it's allowed here in California, in Canada.
If it's alcohol related, it's not allowed.
Right.
You don't have to go too far. It's just not allowed.
And really,
before you even go there.
If anybody in Canadian government is listening, you're shooting yourself in the foot. You've shot your craft brewing industry in the foot, and you're making it a lot harder for people to do good beer in Canada. And what we can do in the States is have a store where you have taps, like a bar.
Yep.
And then you have beer for sale. So sort of it's called caps and taps kind of idea.
Yep.
And then I would love to do sandwiches on top of that. You know, call it caps, taps, and wraps or something. And
that's trademarked.
Nobody else,
you can't steal that.
Don't steal it. And I have a perfect location for it and everything, and I feel like it's a rock solid thing. I just don't have the backing. That would be a fun, really fun thing for me to do. It would be a way for me to maybe segue from beer writing into sort of beer distribution or whatever,
yeah.
You know, sort of, and add the sandwich part in a sort of professional way and be like the sandwich consultant / owner / you know, beer buyer. That would be really fun.
I want to see that business card.
Yeah, I really enjoy doing TV because I call it, and radio. Like I call this, you know, we prepared for this a little bit. We talked before, and I call this like high-end conversation.
Yeah,
because it's not very often that you sit with someone, you try not to say and you know, you've actually plotted out some of the ideas, and you've done a little bit of research. You know, so I really like radio and podcasting and TV for that. So, you know, my dream is that I'm still writing, but that it's more like 2 or 3 times a week and exactly what I want to do.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it can be those 30-hour things because I'm only doing, you know, 2 or 3 times a week, and
yep.
It's a column. And yep. it's just like something I put together over the last, you know, month or whatever. And, you know, it's not little stuff. It's like, you know, as big as I can be, you know, as rarely as I can be. And then, you know, TV and radio and, you know, yeah, charities. I would love to do that, too. I need to make sure that my kids growing up, I grew up in Jamaica and Germany and places where we didn't have much money. And so I need to make sure that my kids know, who are growing up in Palo Alto,
yeah,
in the seat of luxury, that people need help, and that people need to, that you need to, that we all have a duty to our common man, to our fellow man, to helping them up. So I think in a perfect life, I'd be doing, every day would be almost even more different than it is now. You know, it'd be. Mm-hmm. You know, like today I'm, you know, going to go on the radio and promote this charity, and then we're going to have a charity event later, and we're going to open this beer here at my store, and then, you know, debut a sandwich, and, you know, later I do a podcast, and then I work on my piece.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that would, but it's not that far from what I do now. It's just,
It's kind of refining
it. A little bit of tweaks there. Yeah,
you're sanding down the edges now.
Yeah, exactly.
It'll get there. I have no doubts it'll get there, that's for sure.
Yeah, that would be really fun.
Day Games was brought to you by HelloFresh. Delicious, healthy food delivered for you to make in your own kitchen. Use the promo code ANTIKA50 for 50% off your first box, courtesy of your friends here at the Antika Podcast Network and HelloFresh. Day Games is executive produced by me, Dr. Mike Son, and Nick Dyka, with support from Kevin Kennedy and technical production by Natalie Stoberman.